So when he joined the staff of the neighborhood house, people didn't necessarily know he was a preacher. What would you say were his strengths at the neighborhood house? You know, what did he bring to the work that was being done there?
He was totally respected. He just had that charisma.
Mm-hmm.
That drew people to him. He was an excellent speaker.
Mm.
Very articulate. And some people called him fearless.
Mm.
And he was a leader.
Mm. And you could see that from the way he carried out his work.
Absolutely.
And he was one of the staff members that was more out and about and organizing, or was he more in the program center helping run programs?
No, he was an organizer.
Mm-hmm.
He was an organizer. People took to him. People gravitated to him.
Do you happen to recall how the idea of the museum, I mean, do you remember the first time you heard mention of this idea that the Smithsonian was going to try and open up a museum off of the mall?
Have you talked with Carol Marsh?
I haven't, no. But I've definitely, I've either read something by her or seen her name mentioned quite a bit.
I talk about her in the book.
That's probably where I've seen.
Mm-hmm. I think she was our first contact with the Smithsonian. And I think they chose John because he was such a forceful person, forceful, articulate, and had the respect of people in the neighborhood.
And do you recall how you got involved? I mean, before it actually opened.
He was already, he had already been chosen.
Mm-hmm.
And I simply called him one day and I said, I would love to come and work at this new museum.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I don't, you know, whatever you want me to do. Scrub floors or what? I just wanted to work there.
Mm. Mm.
So,
do you have any memories of the time leading up to the actual opening? There were young people, was it the Trailblazers or another youth group, maybe it was the Rebels, that were assisting with...
The Trailblazers. I guess I'd have to read my book.
Oh.
But they assisted in getting the building in shape.
Mm-hmm.
They painted and I don't know what else they did.
And do you have any memories of what kinds of things you all did in preparation for the opening in terms of coming up with ideas for exhibitions or forming, you know, a community advisory committee or board, those kinds of things? Do you have any of those?
Well, it was all new territory. I had no museum experience, and I would say that most of us had never worked in a museum before, and many of us had not visited a museum in a very long time. So the sky was the limit. We didn't have that much of a say in the opening exhibits. Pardon me, I think I mentioned that in the book, that the exhibits that were the initial ones didn't really say anything about who we were or what the neighborhood was, or, and it was Jim Mayo who has passed, who suggested that we borrow an exhibition of paintings from the National Portrait Gallery. Paintings, portraits of famous black Americans, and it transformed the museum. People come in and see all of these images of folk who look like them. And that was the beginning of exhibits like that. Exhibits that spoke to us, our heritage, our history, our culture.
And which was an incredibly powerful and important development in the museum world at large.
The other thing was that John wanted the museum to be all-inclusive. You didn't have to be nominated to be on the advisory committee. You just came to the meeting. And I don't know how many eventually became a part of that advisory committee, but it was open to anybody. And meetings were held in the museum, the doors were open, and anybody could come in, including the fellas on the corner. They were all welcome, and John made sure that they knew that. I think that's one of the things that made the museum what it was. John's inclusiveness, wanting everybody to be involved, who wanted to be involved.
Now, do you happen to have any memories of the opening day?
Oh, yes. I talk about that, too. John said there were 12,000 people. But Teresa may have been among the people who helped serve punch next door. I don't know how they did that. It was a glorious night. People came from all over, but especially from the neighborhood, to open those doors.
One name that I forgot to ask you about, and I think she was also involved with the opening, was Bernice Edmonds.
Bernice and I worked in the same office. She was my co-worker. Bernice passed. I see her husband all the time at the bowling alley.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. He used to bowl. Now he's in a wheelchair. But he comes to the bowling alley regularly. I see him. And he mentions the children I don't know where the children are, but he's still around. And you mentioned Bernice because...
Well, several people have mentioned her to me, and you know, that she was very important, very involved, and one person was saying that her brother is
Bobby Hooks,
who came to the opening of the museum.
Yeah, I think his picture might be in the book.
Yeah. And so I was just wondering if you had any memories of kind of what her role was, either at the Southeast Neighborhood House or in helping organize the opening of the museum.
Well, as I say, we shared the same office. Mm. We worked together. And her role was the same as the rest of us,
mm.
the roles of the rest of us, helping to get the building in shape and being sure that people were involved and felt that, continued to feel it was their museum.
Was she formally on the staff of the museum?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we shared the same office.
Oh, at the museum?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and also at the Southeast Neighborhood House?
Oh, I don't remember.
Oh, okay.
I don't remember Southeast House, but at the museum.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
See, I didn't realize, because no one mentioned to me that she was actually on staff at the museum. I just heard that she was had worked at the Southeast Neighborhood House and then was involved with the opening. But I didn't realize she actually worked at the museum as well. Oh, wow. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Does that, so at the museum, was she involved with... do you happen to remember how long she was stayed on the staff at the museum?
I don't remember. I remember that she became very ill.
Hmm.
And
And do you remember her brother coming to the opening and someone was saying, and I don't know if this is accurate or not, but that at the time that of the opening of the museum, he had portrayed Frederick Douglass in a play, or was it on film? I'm not sure. If
I don't remember.
Oh, okay.
And I don't think I had any real contact with him that day, because there was so much to do and we were all flying around here, there, and the other way. And John took him in tow.
Okay.
We saw him, but we didn't have an opportunity to talk, interact.
One of the person whose name I also forgot to mention in relation to Southeast Neighborhood House was Eartha Kitt. Did you ever, because I know she was supportive of Rebels with the Cause and some of the activities, and I was just wondering if you had ever come into contact with her or knew of her relationship with the Southeast Neighborhood House. No. And was Muhammad Ali at the opening of the museum, or he had visited a later time?
I don't remember his ever being there. It's a long time ago, but I don't remember his being there.
Do you have memories of the exhibition, The Rat, Man's Invited Affliction? And if so, what do you remember about how the idea came about, and what the process was like to actually create this?
I remember very well. We had a snake in our too. And snake ate mice. The children would, every now and then they would be there when we were feeding the snake. I said to John one day, you know, I think we ought to have an exhibit on rats, and talked about the children's reaction. And that's in the book. The exhibits people were very, they guarded their space. We had, when I say we, program staff, had the children's room. That was our space. We could do anything we want, but once you got outside of the children's room, that was exhibition space. And I said, John, I think we ought to do an exhibit on rats. I said, but we'll keep it small and we won't trespass. I don't think I've used the word trespass. And he said, oh, no, no, no. You take the whole floor. Talking with the children, talking with adults, talking with other staff. I remember there was a person on, the Smithsonian staff who had an office and who had done some research with rats. At any rate, I remember going out to see him with a couple of the Yackers, Youth Advisory Council members, and talking with him. And he gave us a lot of information, a lot of suggestions, and we moved ahead. So I wrote the script. And I was doing it, I was trying to do that along with all the other things I was supposed to do. And Larry Thomas was so frustrated. He said, you know, I need to see the whole thing, and you're giving me pieces. I said, Larry, I'm doing the best I can, honestly. Eventually, I got the whole I just can't say enough about Larry Thomas and Jim Mayo. When they came up with the, he said, look, come to Woodward. One of the things that people gasped about when they came in was this, there's a picture of it, I think, in the book, this small room, the small structure, not a room, that was a part of the exhibit. You looked in the windows and you saw the back of a house and a backyard, but then if you sort of crouched down, you could see the burrows and the rats. They got rats from the zoo, and they, of course, had to be sure they were free of disease and DDT, blah, blah, blah. And they introduced rats into that environment so that when people came, they could see the backyard, which was strewn with trash and whatever, but then they could see the burrows and how rats lived underground. it was something.
What do you remember about people's response to it? And I mean, part of, at least in my limited understanding of it, part of it was also trying to address the fact that there was an unjust and a disproportionate infestation of rats in certain neighborhoods in Washington, like in Southeast.
Well, the city did a survey and found that we had a 68% infestation rate in our neighborhood. And part of the message of the exhibition was that we had a stake in all of this. We had to be sure that our backyards didn't look like the backyard and the structure. We were careful what we did with our trash and our garbage. That we cleaned up. That was part of the message. And I think that got over at least to the young people who came in. The exhibit traveled, and I remember traveling to someplace in New York just to see how they were handling it. And I watched the docent talking with the children who were about to go into the exhibit. And she was saying, and guess what? You're going to see real rats. And the children, and I thought, oh my, my, my.
In the exhibit, one of the things that you also featured, I think, was the work of Pride Incorporated.
I'm sure we did mention
the fact that they have these rat abatement services.
Absolutely. The Rat Patrol.
Rat Patrol.
Yeah.
How did you see John Kinnard take on the role of director of the museum? You mentioned that, you know, no one or very few of the early staff members had, you know, actually worked in the museum before, and I'm just wondering about his trying to lead a museum, and for the Smithsonian no less, that really was trailblazing and breaking new ground and trying to be a neighborhood museum. What did you think of his approach and how he went about trying to do that, and what was the collaboration between the various roles and departments and people on staff?
Well, he inspired trust, and people felt they could talk with him. You never knew who was in his office, or it was somebody, somebody from the mall, very important person. Or somebody from the corner. You just never knew, because his door was open to everybody and people trusted him. So that it made his job easier. And we all respected him.
And in what ways do you remember the neighborhood being involved in the work of the museum?
Other than the advisory committee?
Yeah, and I guess if you happen to remember, if there were particular community members that were especially involved with the advisory committee, or in different ways with, you know, the way that the museum operated.
Well, you had everybody from Al Mordell, to Wee Wee, who was on the maintenance staff, Milton Jones, who was definitely a part of the neighborhood, and Tiny Tyler, another neighborhood person. There were just so many from all walks of life, all stations of life. The museum was a kind of melting pot where you might see anybody on any given day. And I think the idea of inclusiveness was something that people respected John for. Marion Hope, remember her? Marion Hope. She's passed, but she was a neighborhood person who was highly respected. She was involved, but again, you never knew who was going to be sitting in John's office.
Do you could you tell me, if you happen to remember, what your average day was like at that time in the early years of the museum? Were you, what kinds of things would you do on a day-to-day basis?
From early in the morning until late at night. Museum was open. There were meetings at night, the Southeast Neighborhood Action Board comes to mind. CNAP used to hold their meetings there. And sometimes they would meet until 12. And I remember once they were there until 1 o'clock in the morning.
Wow.
And
what exactly was CNAB? What was the work of CNAB?
Neighborhood Action, Southeast Neighborhood Action Board. Teresa could tell you more about that. I was trying to think of the fellow who was, he's gone. Can't think of his name. But ask Teresa about the many issues they tackled. But you asked me what I did.
Yeah.
I remember coming in at 9, sometimes to open up the museum, and being there until 9, 10, 11 o'clock. I did tours until we were able to hire a couple of people from the neighborhood to help with giving tours and guiding people around who came in. Marshall Jackson, he's gone. But what did I do?
It sounds like a lot. Many different roles. And
I was, again, I did a lot of work with the schools. And there were a lot of, you've probably seen them, a lot of booklets not booklets, but such as you. Mm-hmm. I'm not giving you those.
Yeah, no, I know. I'm not going to take
it. I had 15 copies of that book, and that's the last.
Wow.
That's the only one I
So
had.
People were walking away with these.
Well, I guess I've given them away over the years.
Mm-hmm.
But there are a number of books that we developed. You've probably seen them all. This was another one you've seen there. Have you seen this one?
This one I have not seen.
You sure you don't want to heat up? You okay?
I'm okay. Thank you.
Okay. But there are so many of them that we did.
Mm.
And I'm just assuming they're still at the museum somewhere.
This looks like a great one, actually. I think that teachers would still love to have something like this.
Yes.
Do you happen to remember any discussions that were had about the museum moving from the Carver, the old Carver Theater, to where it currently is? Were there discussions, or was it, again, one of these things where it was, you know, a decision made from above?
I don't think I was much involved in that decision. John and the advisory committee and others were the point persons. But there was a general feeling that we'd outgrown the museum, wasn't enough space to develop the exhibits, actually produce them. There were other things on one hand. On the other hand, we were so convenient to people. People stop by on the way to the Safeway or to wherever they were going. And the children were there every day. Every day. Went to talk with George to parent. They wanted to do things in the children's room. There were always activities going on there. Right on the bus line, so convenient. And I think people realized once we moved to the top of the hill that people didn't come because they were just passing by. It was beautiful. physical, but it was also removed.
Mm. So you could see a difference.
Oh yes, absolutely, absolutely.
Mm.
And children didn't flock in after school. Stay. No. So it was different. Beautiful. Beautiful. But
did your work change at all after the move to the new building? Or what did it remain the same in terms of day to day?
I think we had to intensify our outreach efforts because essentially we were serving a new neighborhood. Before, we were right next to Savoy School, Nichols Avenue, they were all walk-to schools, but there were no walk-to schools. Well, I shouldn't say that. Our Lady used to walk down the hill, but Turner and Garfield and Stanton.
Was the at that time, was the recreation center there? But you, in other words, there had to be more of an intentional effort to do outreach and build relationships.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
What was your feeling or your perspective on the relationship between the museum and, you know, Smithsonian Central down on the mall? Was there much interaction? You know, what was the sense of the relationship between the museum and the rest of the Smithsonian?
The relationship existed on different levels.
Mm.
On John's level, certainly interacted with the secretary and other museum directors. I don't know about John and about Larry and Jim in terms of how they related to others on the mall. As far as I was concerned, we had an educators group, and we met. There was a lot of interaction there. That's about it.
So there was not, in terms of like exhibitions and programming, there was not, directives or decisions coming from the mall. It was the museum was really on its own.
John would not have allowed that.
Was there a turning point where you felt like the museum became fully stable? I don't know, at any point in your years there, was there a moment where you really felt like, because at the beginning it was essentially a kind of an experiment, you know, the Smithsonian.
In the beginning, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, at least they felt it was an experiment.
Mm-hmm. Did you have the feeling from the beginning that this was going to be a viable long-term museum? Or were there moments where it felt like there were challenges that were so great, or the Smithsonian was considering, I don't know, but I'm just wondering whether there was always a sense that it would be a long term, 50 years, doing its work.
I don't know that we thought that far ahead. We were engaged in something that, well, I was going to say none of us had ever experienced before, but Jim Mayo had a lot of experience. He had, and so had Larry. So the two of them were very comfortable in what they were doing at the museum. The others of us, I think, sort of feeling our way for a while, that we felt comfortable in what we were doing, with whom we were and with whom we were doing it with. That's not going to matter. But anyway, we looked forward to the long term.
Are there any projects or exhibits that stand out in your mind as your favorite of the museums?
The rat exhibit.
Oh, yeah.
That was my exhibit.
Are there any others, other exhibits or other projects, like, you know, the books and that are your favorite or you're most proud of having worked on, or that are most special to you?
Every day was a new day. Every project learned something new. There were so many exhibits over the years, I can't even begin to. They were all exciting because they all brought forth new information. I don't know, I guess I'd have to see
a list
of all of the exhibits that we've done, but they were all exciting, all different, all learning experiences.
I've been wondering how you felt the museum was affected, because it certainly was, but you know, what changes you witnessed upon John Kennard's passing, you know, what impact that ended up having on the museum itself.
I'd have to go back to that time. He passed in, was it 80?
I think it was 89. Yeah, I think
89. I'd been out of town and Audrey called to let me know. I think we were all just devastated because he was indestructible. He was just going to live forever and ever. It was a time of change and certainly upheaval in terms of what was going to happen, what was the new director going to be like, what changes would he institute. There was just a period of uncertainty. That's all I can say when he died.
And when Was the next director Steve Newsom, or was there someone between? I mean, I guess I'm wondering what it was like to work under his successors. If it changed the work that you did, or the change.
Was Steve the next director?
Would it be in here? I think. I think he may have been, but I'm not 100% sure.
That was 89. That was about 25 years ago or so.
I think it was Steve Newsom.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I retired not too long after then. Mm. I don't really remember that much about any significant changes that he brought with him.
And when, before your retirement, the museum had changed its name, and did it become the Anacostia Museum and Center for African American History and Culture? Was that while you were still with the museum, when the center became part of the museum?
When the center became part of the museum?
Well, the museum's name changed to the Anacostia Museum and Center for
African American. Did it become the community museum?
I think that was later.
Was that later? Okay, and it became, what are you saying it became?
It was the Anacostia Museum and Center for African American
History
and Culture.
Okay. I don't know that we changed that much.
Hmm.
Changed what we were doing that much. I'm not sure, because I didn't stay on that much
mm-hmm.
longer. And I think more significant changes occurred perhaps after I'd gone or
mm-hmm.
I'd been gone.
Mm-hmm. I wonder about changes in staff, and who were some of your closest collaborators over the years in the work that you were doing, like Gail Lowe or Portia James or others.
Well, of course, Claire is still there.
Mm-hmm.
Joanna, I guess, has retired.
Mm-hmm.
Joanna has retired. Claire is still there. Habiba has retired. Habiba was a member of the Youth Advisory Council.
Oh, really?
So we go back a long
time. I didn't know that.
Time.
Wow.
Absolutely. She's in that photograph of kids are standing in front of the museum.
Oh, wow.
She's in that photograph.
Wow. She retired before I started, so I didn't haven't had the chance to.
Okay.
But I have, I know of her because of her name, but when I got there, she had already retired, so I didn't have the chance to know her, but
so many of the people I started out with, you know, they've retired, and Louise is gone. Porsche. Who else might be there? There's some still there, but we didn't work together a very long time, like Claire and Joanna and I.
And I guess we kind of touched upon this, but I'm wondering if you noticed the changes in the relationship between the museum and the surrounding neighborhood over the years. And I'm wondering if between 1967 and when you retired, which I guess was around 1994, what kinds of changes, if any, did you notice in the relationship between the museum and the community or the neighborhood?
There was not the closeness. You know, we're surrounded by a lot of land and a recreation department. And I understand, what is the name of the, Martha's Table is building over there. But the neighborhood itself was so different. We were in a residential neighborhood. We could walk across the street into somebody's house or into a business or a store, as opposed to walking out the front door on from the present site, and you're walking into, don't see any people. Don't see any people. That's a big difference.
I wonder if over the time of the museum, if people often or not made reference to the Southeast Neighborhood House. And its role in the neighborhood and its relationship to the museum. I mean, for instance, was there a relationship between the neighborhood house and the museum for, you know, the first many years that it was open? Or was it two totally separate?
Say that again.
Since a number of you had worked at the Southeast Neighborhood House before working with the museum, I'm wondering if...
Not too many? No.
Oh.
Mm-mm.
Was it just you and John, or...
Mm-mm. I don't think any of the others.
Oh, maybe Bernice Edmond.
Yeah, just the two of us.
Was there any relationship that was maintained between the museum and the neighborhood house after the museum opened, or was it really just two separate institutions?
If there was a relationship, it probably was at John's level.
Did you stay abreast of what was happening at the Southeast Neighborhood House after you left, or not?
Probably not. I was so busy getting ready to open a museum, and that was my focus. 24 hours of the day.
And do you know what ended up happening exactly to the Southeast Neighborhood House? I mean, it eventually closed, I guess maybe in the late 70s, early 80s.
Money.
Money. And did you ever, I know that there was a Miss Hawkins that took over.
Hannah Hawkins
took over the building and started running her own daycare and after school program out of the house. Was there any relationship between the museum and her and what she was doing?
She lived in Sheridan Terrace, I believe. Had a program there, whether it was in her house or in some facility there, and she just took over Southeast House one day, and nobody put her out. I volunteered for a very short time. She had a lot of help. And she's still there. She's still there. Children mine.
Oh, yeah.
Children mine. I don't think there's any relationship between children mine and I just don't know.
Yeah. When you look back on your many years of service with the museum and in the neighborhood, I wonder if you have any thoughts about what the impact of the museum was on the neighborhood, and maybe vice versa as well, but kind of what you see as the influence or impact of the museum.
Was an institution that people could relate to, an institution people could call their own. This is my museum. And they were involved. People knew the staff. Staff knew them. You have to remember that when the museum opened, all of the staff, as few as there were, lived in the neighborhood. We didn't come from miles away.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't commute or have to drive. We could walk from our homes to the museum. And I think that made an impact because we felt this was ours.
And do you have any sense of what the impact was within the Smithsonian of the work of the museum?
I only know what I've read about. And people say that the museum had an impact on other museums in terms of what they did, how they did it.
Mm-hmm.
And there were some new innovations, whatever they might have been, that other museums adopted. That's what they say. That's what I read about. I hope that that's true.
Yeah. And do you have any thoughts or reflections on what it meant to you to have worked at the museum and kind of what impact it had on your own life and You know, to have worked with the museum for so many years.
Well, for a long time it was my life, mm-hmm. as it was the life of my co-workers.
Mm-hmm.
We lived, breathed the museum. We were there from early in the morning until late at night. Not because we had to be there, but because we were doing something that we loved, and something we thought was extremely important. As I say, it became our lives.
Yeah.
The museum was our life. That's all we did from early in the morning till late at night for a very long time.
Yeah. And I know that the importance of the museum was, I mean, it had an impact on so many people and so many people's lives, and maybe less important, but that equally as interesting is that so many historical figures were tied to the museum or came into contact with the museum. And one of the things that I, you know, as in recent years, as the museum is trying to digitize and you know, catalog all of the records and materials, I've been coming across some interviews that I think you and others did with a number of people, and I'm wondering if you happen to remember, for instance, meeting and talking with folks that were involved with the fight for desegregation of DC public schools, like Gardner Bishop, or Spotswood Bowling, or the Mrs. Jennings, the mother of Chester Jennings and other Jennings siblings.
Spotswood T. Bowling. He was the figure in the Brown versus Board of Ed,
mm-hmm.
and lived in the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people don't know that.
It's
gotten lost in history. It is still a surprise to me when a couple of weeks ago, a woman shouted at me, "Miss Martin, Miss Martin." And I said, "That's a voice from my past." She said, "I remember you from the museum."
Oh, wow.
And every now and then, someone will say, "I know who you are. Don't you remember me?" And of course, that person might have been 10 years old, a long, long time ago. But anytime anyone calls me Miss Martin, I know that it's a voice from my past. I think it's a credit to not just me, but to John and to Larry and Jim and so many others, that people remember and feel that the impact of the museum is still there in their lives. They can tell you things that you've forgotten. And I think that's a good thing. I don't know that there are that many institutions around that have people who hold those kinds of memories. I'm sure there are.
But I think you're right that the museum does, because of your work and others, holds a special place in people's hearts and had an impact on so many people. So thank you for all of your tireless work over the years, and also for taking some time out of your day to share some of your memories with me.
Have you talked with Fletcher Smith?
I haven't.
Fletcher is now he has changed his name. He'll give you a different perspective.
Oh, yeah.
He certainly will.
Oh, yeah.